So today we'll be taking a look at Guru Bhakti. That's a very deep and subtle area. We'll be looking at it in brief. But I think it will enliven you and also give you some inspiration to carry you forward in your relationship with Gurudev. I'd like to begin the session as we usually do, by meditative reading of Narottam Das Thakura's Guru Vandana. It's important to remember when we read these bhajans that they are a revelation of heart by acharyas. Even if you have association with Sadguru, physical proximity with Sadguru, you may not have this depth of access to their heart. You want that. So it's a very, very special thing that the acharyas actually put their heart before us and said, this is what it really looks like. So you should never take these bhajans as just something ordinary. They're far from ordinary, they're extraordinary. They're windows into the emotions of Braj. They're actually windows into the emotions, the actual emotions of the residents of Braj. So it makes them very, very special. The lotus feet of my spiritual master are the abode of pure devotional service. I bow down to his lotus feet with great care and attention. By his grace, I can cross over this material existence and obtain Krishna. O mind, make the teachings emanating from the lotus mouth of my spiritual master one with my heart, and do not desire anything else. Attachment to the lotus feet of Gurudev is the best way to make spiritual advancement. His mercy fulfills all desires for spiritual perfection. He who has given me the gift of transcendental vision is my Lord birth after birth. By his mercy, divine knowledge is revealed within my heart, bestowing prema bhakti and destroying ignorance. The Vedic scriptures sing of his character. O my beloved spiritual master, O ocean of mercy and friend of the fallen souls, you are the teacher of everyone and the life of all people. O master, be merciful unto me and give me the shade of your lotus feet. May your glories now be proclaimed throughout the three worlds. So in hearing this, we're hearing, in effect, of the perfection, perfectional stage of Guru Bhakti. I want to look at it from a different angle of vision, a far more pragmatic angle of vision. We'll be looking at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura. So let's look at our first handout. We'll begin, before we look at the mood and vision of a realized disciple, we remind ourselves of the absolute nature of Sadguru. This is from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's from a Vyasa Puja lecture that he gave in 1936. In a sense, Guru is like the hand attached to the body of God, who is all existence, all intelligence, and all bliss. Satchidananda Vigraha. With his hand, God rubs his own feet. The hand of God is his own limb. In this case, God is serving himself. God himself appears as the Guru in order to teach how to serve himself. This is the essence of what he's saying. God himself appears as the Guru in order to teach how to serve himself. Our Gurudev is also one with the body of God. There is God to be served. There is also God who serves. God is object, and God is as support. Mukunda is God to be served. He is the object God, or the Vishaya. And the most beloved of Mukunda, Sri Gurudev, is serving God, or the Akshaya, the support. There is no one so dearly loved by God as our Gurudev. He alone is the best beloved of the Lord. So What is the mood and vision of someone who actually has realized his Gurudev's position? He's cognizant of the actual position of Guru. This is not going to come through theoretical understanding. This is not going to come before Nista. The Anatta Nivritti stage we have to pass across, it will start to reveal itself as Nista. Because at that stage we're talking basically of two Nistas, Guru Nista and Non-Nista. So only then will we start to get a glimpse, by mercy of Chaturguru, by mercy of Guru himself, of the actual position, his actual position. And it's quite phenomenal. If I disobey the law which has come down to me through the chain of preceptorial succession, the offense due to omission to carrying out the command of Guru will sever me from the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev. Now this looks like a very simple statement, but it's actually very subtle and very deep. We sometimes, if not always, forget that the instruction of Guru is coming down through the chain of preceptorial succession. So in effect, to disregard the instruction of Guru is to disregard the whole disciplic succession and the very process of disciplic succession given by Krishna. We think it's a one-on-one. Not such a big thing. I'll do it tomorrow. But what we're looking at is a whole network of support and education that is coming through the Siddhic succession. So simply by the act of not following the instruction of Guru, we are really putting ourselves in quite a nasty position. If in order to carry out the command of the Guru I have to be arrogant, brutish, or suffer eternal perdition, I am prepared to welcome such eternal damnation and even sign a pact to that effect. This is not fanaticism. This is someone who has connection with the Absolute Realm and has long before left the mental platform. No preoccupation with public opinion if it stands in the way of following the Guru's instruction. I will not listen to the words of other malicious persons in lieu of the command of Sri Gurudev. I will dissipate with indomitable courage and conviction the currents of thought of the rest of the world, relying on the strength derived from the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev. This is a very realistic statement. You may take it as fanaticism, but it's actually realistic. You look at the way people en masse think. Does it have anything in common with the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam? Absolutely, almost the opposite. So, Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, by the mercy of the Dasa of my Guru, just by his words, I can conquer all that ignorance. If I have full faith in the words of Guru, I can conquer all that ignorance. Quite an amazing statement, and especially important for preachers to remember, because we are constantly walking into a field of ignorance. By sprinkling a particle of the pollen of the lotus feet of my preceptor, crores of people like you will be saved. There is no such learning in this world, no such sound reasoning in all the 14 worlds, no man-gods can ever weigh more than a solitary particle of the dust of the lotus feet of my Gurudev. Gurudev, in whom I have implicit trust, can never spite me. He's not envious. He's a mercy manifestation of Krishna. He doesn't think like an ordinary person, have the emotions of an ordinary person. He will never spite me because he's not envious of me. He's not envious of anyone. I am by no means prepared to listen to the words of anyone who wants to hurt me or to accept such a malicious person as my preceptor. The moment I deviate from Sri Guru, the moment I become forgetful of He who keeps me attached to His lotus feet at every moment, I will without a doubt diverge from the truth. Very special statement. It's not our endeavor that keeps us safely at the feet of Guru. It's the mercy of Guru. He is keeping me attached to His lotus feet at every moment. What qualification do we have to be at the feet of Guru? We have absolutely no qualification. Our only qualification is His mercy. So by Him, His endeavor, His concern, His kindness, I can stay attached to His lotus feet. When I am thus separated from Sri Guru, countless misgivings and deficiencies will engulf me. Why? Because if I'm not under the shelter of Guru, if I'm not under the shelter of the internal energy, I'm taking shelter of this crazy mind. There's no alternative. This is what we're looking at here. So if I'm separated from Sri Guru, countless misgivings and deficiencies will engulf me. I shall simply spend my time bathing when I'm hot and bundling up when I'm cold. We'll spend our years doing that. Summer follows winter, right? In other words, I will become more anxious to arrange for my own comfort than to serve Sri Gurudev. If at the beginning of every year, every month, every day, and every moment, I do not remember my Gurudev, who saves me from the absorption in that which has no connection to my constitutional nature or is separate from Krishna Bhakti, then I will definitely fall into greater and greater difficulty. So sometimes we think in not such a positive way about the instructions that Guru gives. But what Dr. Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is giving us here is an idea of how we should think of those instructions. They are keeping me connected in some small way to my constitutional nature. They're keeping me connected to Krishna Bhakti. If I don't have that connection and I die, I can't have it by myself. If Guru doesn't give me this connection, the result will be that I will definitely fall into greater and greater difficulty. Yeah? I will try to present myself as Guru. I will be swallowed up by the ill mentality of believing that others should worship me as such. This alone is dvitiya abhinivesh, infatuation with the worthless purposes of our unnatural state. We are not Guru. This is an artificial designation. We may be acting in the service of Guru. The important thing is, I am servant. I am none of these designations. As soon as I take on any of these other designations, I become a servant of my mind, the modes, and my conditioning. However elevated others may see me, this will be my actual position. To come and offer Guru Puja just for one day is insufficient. It is our duty to serve Gurudev at every moment. Any thoughts or questions about that?
Very high state, Mother.
What's that?
It's a very high state, you know, the consciousness is so...
Very high state of consciousness. But if you're living in the real realm, this is a general state of consciousness. Our unfortunate position is that we have absolutely no experience or knowledge of Guru Bhakti or Guru culture. We're not coming from that tradition. So to us it seems extremely high. We may even think, oh, this is hype. We may think, this is not for me. But this is the norm in real circles. This is actually how a disciple of Sadhguru should actually feel at heart level. It's a heart experience. It's not an intellectual experience. Something you can understand through the intelligence. When you feel this attraction for Guru, that's when you can experience this kind of relationship. The heart is just solid connected, solid attraction. That cannot come before Nishtha. It will not start before Nishtha. There's so much trash in the way. Too many other attachments in the way.
But sometimes I think, Padali, in spite of our disqualification, uh-huh. the mercy is so high uh-huh. that it pierces through all the trash.
The essential thing is how we use the mercy. Mercy is like a knife. You can kill yourself with it, or you can cure yourself with it.
Can you explain that?
It doesn't need explaining.
just a little bit.
Mataji had said mercy abused means mercy lost.
What's that?
Mercy abused means mercy lost.
Yes, in an essence. If the mercy that you're receiving is abused or neglected, it's lost. And it may take you many lifetimes to regain it.
Lifetimes?
Yes. It's not a cheap thing. This is not a cheap thing we're looking at. The essential thing is your sincerity. Mercy can flow on a rock, or it can flow on a plant in the form of rain. If rain falls on the rock, it will wash it a bit. Is there any growth? You're catching it.
Yes.
So it's a matter of receptivity of heart, sincerity of heart. So what you're saying is right, in the sense that we are mercy cases, and without it we would go nowhere. But the thing is, we have to know how to use that mercy. We may make mistakes, we do make mistakes, but if we're sincere, the mercy will keep flowing. Especially if we're trying to share that mercy with others. Okay, so we don't have a lot of experience of Guru Bhakti or Guru culture, so I thought the best way to gain some real experience of it, practically speaking, is to hear from our acharyas. And so what we'll do is we'll take a look at the dynamics of Guru Bhakti through the divine eyes of Bhakti Vinod Thakur to try and deepen our understanding, to help us deepen our understanding of what it is. The first section of this article called Guru Bhakti is basically, we've covered it in the last couple of sessions, so I want to begin on the second page. Last para, it begins, it is appropriate, because this is relevant to today's discussion. Second page, last paragraph. It is appropriate for the disciple to follow with determined faith whatever instruction is given to him by Sri Gurudev. If the disciple fails to do so, and hears different instructions from various people, due to the fault of unnecessary hankerings, he will be unable to do bhajan. It is crucial that we catch this. What Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here is an essential element of developing heart-deep, heartfelt guru bhakti. You're sold out to Guru. So it's to develop this determined faith. We follow Guru's instructions. We're not preoccupied with hearing different instructions from various people. What is the value of it? If you have a child in the womb, it has one connection for nourishment, umbilical cord. You're not going to try and make some alternative arrangement. It's going to harm the child that's growing in the womb. It's going to harm the spiritual personality who's growing in the womb of the material energy. You're catching it?
Yes.
Very, very important. The ear is how we're being nourished. The connection between the ear and the heart is the umbilical, the spiritual umbilical cord that gives us nourishment. To grow as a spiritual personality. So if we do that, and it's a result of unnecessary hankerings, yeah? It's like, you know, and those hankerings appear many times to be spiritual. I want to be advanced. I want to be a Raganuga. I want to be. But instead of realizing that all my wannabes should be placed at the lotus feet of Guru and the Acharyas, no, I'll do it myself. Yeah. I'll do it myself. Doesn't work. May work for a while, may work even up to Bhava. But Prem, invitation only. Invitation only. You can pull from Baba. Sobering. Yes? If it appears that Sri Guru has given an order contrary to Shastra, then with a simple heart, the disciple should express himself at his feet and then reconcile it with the words of Shastra. Two important words used here by Bhaktivinoda Thakur: if it appears, not that he has. It's an apparent. To me, it appears this way. I don't have so much knowledge. I don't have so much realization. I don't have so much depth. So it appears that it's wrong, that it's contrary to Shastra. So how do I approach it with a simple heart? Not a complicated heart. Not that I've got all the answers. I just go as a simple fool and say, I really don't understand. Can you explain it? Yeah. So in that way, we should express ourselves at the Guru's feet, and then we can reconcile the words with Shastra. However, if one does not carry out Sri Gurudev's directions with special care and firmness, the disciple by no means can attain his mercy. Because Sri Gurudev's instruction is Prema Sutta. You're in a deep, dark ditch. You're calling out for help. The Guru is kind enough to say, okay, I'll help you. He'll throw you down a Prema Sutta in the form of an instruction. It's up to you to take it. You don't catch hold of it. What's the value of it? It's specifically thrown down into that deep ditch to pull you out of it. It is for you. To pull you out of the deep, dark ditch. It's for nobody else. So what is the value of it if we don't hold it? And hold it as more dear than life. Not that halfway out of the ditch, we're halfway up that deep, dark ditch, almost to the top. I don't know that this is really the best thing I can do. We'll fall down and break a few bones. Holding on to it. There may be a nest of bees in that area. I don't like inconvenience. I don't want to be bitten by the bees. No, you have to hold on to it. Whatever it takes. You have to be prepared to hold on to it. It's the mercy of Guru. If you want the real mercy, this is it. The instruction. The real mercy is Krishna prayer. Simply by his desire, that Guru who is the topmost of Bhagavats can transmit potency within the heart of the disciple and thus make him a Param Bhagavat. You look at the work of those three Grihastha couples who went to England. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's best man couldn't come anywhere close to that. So what was the connection? How did they manifest that potency? Because of their complete faith in Prabhupada. Complete practical faith in Prabhupada. Naturally, however, such an inclination does not arise in Sri Gurudev to instill that potency in an unfit disciple. You have to be fit. That disciple who carries out the instructions of Sri Guru with great vigilance soon becomes qualified to receive the wealth of Guru's mercy. Only then can he realize the real meaning of Guru Kripa. Now you don't need intelligence, you don't need learning, you don't need strength, you don't need wealth to carry out the instructions of Sri Guru with great vigilance. We saw it with the illiterate Brahmin at Sri Chetra. His Guru Maharaj told him, you sit and read Bhagavad Gita every day. He was an illiterate. He could have said to his Guru Maharaj, but Guru Maharaj, I can't read. He didn't say that. Simple person. Guru Maharaj told me, I should do it, I should do it. So we sat there with the book, sometimes upside down. People laughed at him. Mahaprabhu told him he was the Acharya in understanding the purport of Bhagavad Gita. He had absolutely no material qualification. But by mercy of Guru, by taking full advantage of that mercy, he became Acharya of Bhagavad Gita according to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Huh? Pretty amazing.
If our Guru tells us to read Gita and we can't read, we don't have to tend him.
Let's leave it to later. As long as an artist remains in the process of bhajan, the disciple should continue to move forward on the path in bhajan as instructed by Sri Gurudev, prudently following the laws and prohibitions of Shastra. Very, very important. This is like, if we don't know how to ride a bike yet, we're just learning. And Prabhupada doesn't want us to hurt ourselves. So he's put two extra wheels on the back of the little bike we're riding. Huh? Guru's instructions and the rules and regulations of Shastra. So if we are using those extra wheels while we're learning to ride, we're not going to hurt ourselves. Then by the mercy of Sri Gurudev, one crosses over the ocean of anattas and arrives in the realm of Nista and Ruchi, Sri Gurudev's mercy flows very forcefully. The heart is not chock-a-block full of junk, so of course it can flow forcefully. Guru's mercy is always flowing forcefully, but whether you can access or not, it all not depends on whether your heart is full of junk. So when, by the mercy of Sri Gurudev, one crosses over the ocean of anattas and arrives in the realm of Nista and Ruchi, Sri Gurudev's mercy flows very forcefully. At that time, Sri Gurudev becomes the very wealth of his life. No one is more important. No one is loved more dearly than Guru. Mamata, possessiveness, appears in the heart of the disciple towards his Gurudev, and gradually attachment towards bhajan increases. Why? Because the disciple has become a vesh. with Guru. The heart is lined up with Guru. The consciousness is lined up with Guru. So then the bhajan very quickly, attachment to bhajan is naturally going to increase because the Guru is attached to bhajan. As the attachment for bhajan increases, the mata ripens and expands, and an unprecedented dasya rasa, service mood towards Gurudev, unfolds. At that time, with great attention, the disciple fully offers his life at the feet of his Gurudev. So this is a very amazing paragraph. From it we are learning the practicalities of how by Guru's mercy we can come to the platform of true, unprecedented dasya-rasa. Now we may see in Vrindavan at Radha Kunj there are many love Radha signs all over the place. Love Radha. Not a bad sentiment, because after all, Radha is Govindadev's first and foremost servitor. But the way that we're looking at it on these little notes all over the place, they seem to be a cheap and populist tactic to capture the attention and sentiments of sahajas and sentimental ignorant people. Because, as we've just read from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this love, this solid attachment, starts first with Guru. First, Nista Nilamani. First, Nista Nilamani. Later, much later, Ujvala Nilamani. There's a very cheap sentiment these days that everybody wants Madhura Ras. And of course it can't be Swakia, it has to be Parakia. So love Radha, love Radha. But I mean, this is cheap. Right now, we deeply and very badly need to cultivate love, true love for Guru. Now, I want to read you something because you may think, oh yeah, that sounds fine, but, you know, I think it's okay to love Radha. But let me point out the subtleties of loving Guru and how that relates to loving Radha. This is explained by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Of course, we're talking Madhurya. If we're talking another rasa, then maybe the feet we'll be talking about will be Baladev's feet. But we're talking Madhurya. So you listen to what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has to say. In Madhurya Ras, the spiritual master is an intimate shakti of Srimati Radharani. He is non-different from the daughter of Vrishabhanu. Only the sincere disciples of a spiritual master in Madhurya Rasa can attain darshan of the beauty of Sri Radha's toenails through the form of their guru. Only the close shishas, or disciples of a spiritual master, can realize that he is a manifestation of, and thus non-different from, the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, Sri Radha. It is not that Srimati Radharani is not present. Even now we can attain her lotus feet and service. If we can see the beauty of Srimati Radharani's toenails in our spiritual master's lotus feet, we will no longer think about where to find her. If we are fortunate enough, we can attain service to and darshan of Srimati Radharani's lotus feet in the darshan and service of our spiritual master's lotus feet, because he is non-different from Sri Radha and very dear to her. So this is a real thing. What value is there in signs everywhere, love Radha? If you want to do it on the cheap, you may be attracted. But if you want to do it for real, then first Guru, love Guru. Maybe we should put signs everywhere, love Guru, love Vaishnava. But this is, you know, we have to be aware of what's going on. And I received a letter recently from a very wonderful Iskcon guru, and amazingly enough, he was talking about this very thing, Amamata for Guru and his mission. I wanted to share it with you. I would like to share with you a wonderful statement made by Srila Prabhupada in San Francisco. I don't have the day, but it's in April 1970. Prabhupada said, "We have now a sampradaya, a party of Lord Chaitanya in the Western countries. That is my success. That is my joy. That is my life. I have no value. I'm insignificant. But somehow or other you have cooperated and you're still cooperating as Lord Chaitanya's sampradaya. Thank you very much." Then Maharaj said, "From this, I can understand how ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada's personal preaching mission and how he identified with it as his success, joy, and life. If we are to develop Amata with Srila Prabhupada and to become Avesh with him, who is the ultimate goal, at least in my existence, then I have to identify with his success, his joy, and his life. He is ISKCON." So Prabhupada's success, joy, and life becomes my success, my joy, and my life. Therefore, this sampradaya ISKCON, which is a party of Lord Chaitanya in the Western countries, is so important. I pray that I can always remain favorable to Prabhupada's personal preaching mission. Such an amazing letter. So we can see that this idea, and when you see it in real life, you experience it in real life, it is very energizing. It is very enlivening. We have a very unrecognized, but very active Prabhupadanuga in our temple in Vrindavan. Her name is Radhakund Devi Dasi. She was one of the first people that came with Prabhupada to India. She's very simple. She's not shastrically inclined, but her life and soul is Prabhupada and distributing his books. And it is an amazing energy to be around her. Sometimes she's been dying of terminal cancer for I don't know how many years. Yes. She has terminal cancer. I've seen her in almost dead states come back to life, almost dead states back to life. But whatever state she's in, she's book distributing. And some time back, she managed to contact, he's recognized as the most famous of astrologers in India. I think he's a Jain from Bangalore. And she managed to contact him. She wanted to get a chart written of her, one of her grandchildren. But he was interested in reading her chart. So he looked at her chart, he looked at her, and he said, "You should have died 5 times by now." She got terminal cancer. "You should have died 5 times by now." He said, "The only thing that is stopping you from dying is that you have a very powerful guru and he's given you a very powerful mantra." So she said that increased her faith even more, you know, and her determination to serve even more. But she is quite an amazing person because she has, you know, like she's finished, physically finished, but she's so dynamic. It's always enlivened, always distributing Prabhupada's books. So, you know, we can see this mamata, this possessiveness, this dedication to Guru alive. And you see it in a number of devotees. It's not that it's one devotee that has this kind of attachment for Guru or Prabhupada. Okay, let's read on. "As long as natural affection for Guru does not rise in the disciple, it is imperative for him to render service unto Sri Gurudev to obtain his mercy. So we're not talking about anything forced, we're talking a natural, spontaneous affection for Guru. If we don't have spontaneous, natural affection for our Gurudev, it hasn't arisen in our hearts yet, our hearts are not clean enough for it to arise in our hearts yet, then it's imperative to serve him. Because by his service will attract his mercy, and then that natural affection will arise in the heart. To fastidiously carry out the words of Sri Gurudev is his principal saver. At this point, this is the essential thing. Not that we take the instructions lightly, but they become very important to us. Fastidiously, we carry out the words of Guru. Not that he says, bring water and we bring milk. What he says is what we do. Many people do not exhibit any determination to execute the instructions of Sri Gurudev. However, they seem to remain very busy in some way or another trying to massage the feet of Sri Gurudev or fanning him. If these services are done with natural inborn affection, much benefit is derived. However, if the disciple retains some insincerity within the heart, which manifests as a hope that by this kind of service I'll become dear to Sri Gurudev, then it will not be at all helpful for him. It's cheapness. Easy to touch the feet of Guru. Easy to pay dandavas to Guru. Not so easy to follow his instruction. So we don't want this cheapness. One cannot become dear to Gurudev in this way. It is the carrying out of the order of Guru that confers great satisfaction for the disciple. Massaging his feet and fanning him are surely not bad. The result of that type of service is that one develops the strength to follow the instructions of Sri Guru, because we become attached to him by doing personal service. And that attachment will give us the strength to follow the instructions. And by that alone, one attains his mercy. Self-satisfaction is ultimately achieved as a result of the savor which is performed with natural innate priti or affection. Very amazing statement. I thought to actually look at this also just in terms of a couple of verses from Prabhupada's Vraha Astika, because when a disciple is in separation from Guru, that's when the heart, that's when the emotions are most strongly flowing. That's when you're going to actually get a very clear, strong image of what Guru Bhakti is. This article by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is extremely interesting because of the intricacy he gives, how it actually, Guru Bhakti actually develops. But then to see, through Prabhupada's writing, how the heart is churning, how the heart is paining, in separation from Guru. So let's have a look at this. We'll look at Vraha Astika 5 and 8. He's talking about his beloved Gurudev, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's on the same page. Where are your pure teachings to be found at this dark hour? Standing as we are on the shore of the ocean of spiritual devastation, only your life-saving glance of causeless mercy can save us from certain death. Only by your infallible grace can we perceive a way to somehow retrace our steps, to return to a life of divine remembrance of the Holy Name in great happiness and implicit faith in your Vaikuntha message. O Blessed Master, please awaken some good intelligence in this insignificant servant of yours, increasing the fullness of his faith in your sublime message day by day. You compassionately took the suffering of misguided humanity upon your own holy head, and I'm feeling severe pains of separation from your pains, of separation from your lotus feet on this day upon which you disappeared from our vision. We could even pray this prayer ourselves to Prabhupada. Same circumstance. Same need. Only by your infallible grace can we perceive a way to somehow retrace our steps. Things have become too much intelligent. Retrace our steps. Return to a life of divine remembrance in the holy name, in great happiness, and implicit faith in your Vaikuntha Vasi, which is all we need. Who are our mistress? It's all we need. Adored Master, you patiently reminded all your disciples time and time again that devotional service to Lord Chaitanya is not performed exclusively in solitude. You took great care to painstakingly explain to all of us that just as the Lord, out of his causeless mercy, preached everywhere and delivered Jagai and Madai, so does the exact same preaching work need to be continued in the present day. The world has now become filled with countless Jagais and Madais, and it is clear to all that the only means for their salvation is the path shown by Chaitanya Nitai. If you were to come again at this time, Srila Prabhupada, and personally re-establish the proper understanding of all these things, in all the 10 directions of joy the people would know no bounds. Hearing the deeply resonant sound of your voice, loudly proclaiming the victory of Mahaprabhu's mission, the demons and atheists would flee, and the thirsty living entities would drink the divine nectar message of Lord Gauranga to their complete fulfillment. The whole world will once again be set aright, whereas in your absence, nothing of value is to be found anywhere. Broken-hearted, this Abhay makes his cry of appeal. O Gurudev, in the bitter throes of separation from your lotus feet, you compassionately felt the suffering of the jivas to be your own, and I am indeed feeling lost and alone on this day of your divine disappearance from our vision. Very, 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 very powerful words from Srila Prabhupada. Any questions? On this,
Yeah. From the last paragraph, couple of lines where he says, as long as natural affection for Gurudev does not rise in the disciple, it is imperative for him to render service unto Srila Gurudev to obtain his mercy. What's the difference between a person in whom the faith has already come, arisen? How differently will they follow? Because I thought that earlier also he's talking about...
Always we follow, but what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making very clear here is that if you haven't received, it's a gift.
Yes.
This Guru Bhakti is a gift. If we haven't received that gift yet, then the way to access it, to access Guru's mercy so we receive that gift, is to serve him. We will serve him.
So it would be the same, it's just that if you haven't received, then by that service it will...
Yes.
Come. And if you have received
it. If.
Yeah, okay.
If you fastidiously carry out the words of Guru.
Okay.
As your principal saver.
Okay.
It's not a cheap thing.
Yeah.
Mataji, I think the question also meant that would the disciple feel any difference? Like when he was following, he was trying to follow the instructions and he has not yet received the mercy. Mm. He's trying to follow the thing.
Yeah, so you're always receiving mercy. It's a matter of how much and what kind.
Okay.
How can you preach without mercy? How
sure.
can you chant the holy name without mercy?
Yeah, sure.
Not possible. But here we're specifically talking about the gift of Guru Bhakti.
Yes.
It's not going to come cheap. Because if you have Guru Bhakti, you have Prem Bhakti. You have access to Prem Bhakti. The door is resilient. So it's not going to be given cheap.
And no, another thing is about this particular line where you also pointed out that it is not cheap. By the service of, you know, the mood of a disciple, that when I do personal service is so that I become dear to my Gurudev by doing that and not following his instruction, or to actually do it in the mood because I'm attached to my Guru and I want to do it. The difference is very subtle. I mean, how do you really read what is the inclination or what is the mood by which we want to do that?
You have to be introspective. There has to be a general mood of introspection that you're not just running around passionately doing things, but you're giving it time to think about what yourself, time to think about what you're doing and the motivation of what you're doing.
So just by like looking inside, going...
Yeah, and praying.
Yeah, okay.
And praying. The other thing is that it's a gradual process, and it's like the opening of a lotus. You know, it doesn't happen overnight.
Slowly.
You know, the outer leaves will first start to open. Doesn't seem to affect the inner sanctum of the lotus. It's going to gradually open. Like, main thing is that we're conscious in what we're doing and we're honest in what we're doing.
Our motivations.
Yeah. Especially. Because a Kandista mentality, and there's nothing wrong with it, everybody goes to kindergarten first. But the Kandista mentality is that we do things in the name of service, but we're actually doing it for our own satisfaction. I want to do this for Guru. Whether he wants it or needs it or not, it's irrelevant. I want to do this for Guru.
Yeah.
That's why we read in Bhagavad Gita 4:34, we approach submissively. That means we approach him on his terms, not on my terms.
Yeah.
If we approach a Vaishnava or a Guru on our terms, it's going to be of very little value. But it's what most devotees do. They approach Guru and tell him their life history and everything and fill up the whole time space with talk about them. They bring the Guru and the Vaishnava into their world. But the whole purpose of approaching Guru, approaching Vaishnava, is for you to gain entrance into their world. For you to gain entrance into their world. It's a far more interesting world, by the way. But this is a way we have to go. And so we can't be impatient. You know, we have to evolve. It's difficult to evolve and be conscious. You know, you see evolution of plants or evolution of, you know, anything in this world. And they're not thinking about it. It's a natural evolution. It's going on under karmic law, it's going on in the modes of nature. But what we are doing as devotees, we're consciously endeavoring to evolve, and we are consciously evolving. So, you know, that's a little bit more interesting and complex. You have a question, Ruth?
So, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying follow the order of Guru, it means mainly what is coming through the parampara, like means the mood and the attend the holy name and like all that instructions.
Yeah, and specific. There will be generic instruction given through the parampara, and there will be specific instruction also. So what should you follow?
But like, which kind of things should we really ask Guru, and which kind, like?
What kind of things we should ask Guru? Things that are related to two things basically, and they're based on the understanding that Krishna consciousness is only about two things: always remembering Krishna and never forgetting him. So questions in the light of always remembering Krishna: how can I improve, you know, my devotional service, my mood, my chanting, like that. And the other is, I have obstacles in my way, how can I overcome them? Those obstacles may be subtle, they may be gross. But you see the both sides of it. You both have, we have to deal with both. You can't deal with one side of the picture. Does that make sense?
Also asking for instructions from him, like what he wants us to do, and then following
that. Only if you're prepared to follow it.
Yes.
You don't ask Guru for service or instruction if you, in your heart of hearts, you're not surrendered to him. Because he may give you an instruction that the mind will reel with.
Many times we see they don't give also very specific, like even...
These days not so much.
But even Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he told Prabhupada, you preach in English.
Mm.
But he knew he wants me to go to the West.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't tell him you have to go to
America
right. Or you have... Like, he had very little, but he understood. He understood.
And also he was enlivened and illumined at heart by Chachaguru. So you know, we always have to remember the team. That it's not just this guru or that guru, but they're actually working as a team. So there will be revelation of what to do, what not to do.
But until that is not there, it doesn't, either you get very clear instructions or not, you anyway won't be able to do it. Like, unless you have that Chaitya Guru's
connection. You'll be able to do something. You'll be able to do something. And that something, if it's done sincerely, will capture mercy. And then you'll be able to do something more, something deeper. It's evolution. It's interesting, a nectar of devotion. Prabhupada compares, it's Rupa Goswami actually, with Prabhupada's translation. He is comparing the role of sadhana bhakti in advancing to a child learning to walk. Now, the essential thing to remember is that the child has an inherent ability to walk. The child has an inherent ability to walk. We all have that inherent ability to purely love Krishna. But still, you have to go through all those painful growing stages. It's not that I have an inherent ability to walk, so I can get up and walk. First, I can't even crawl. I have trouble even turning over on my little belly. Right? So slowly, slowly, slowly. And so much help required.
Endeavor also, again.
Endeavor, help, both. Mercy and endeavor, always the dual key. So you see, it's sort of like, it's inherently there. But how much evolution is involved in achieving it. Any other questions?
Do we have time for another question?
Yeah.
I have asked you this before, but I would like you to elaborate on this a little more.
Okay.
Sometimes one may get a service from Guru, which is not something which you think you can do,
mm-hmm.
or something which you don't think is good for your sanity and Krishna consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And in that sense, if you decide not to do it, like for example, I'll just take a hypothetical example, that sometimes Guru may give you a management service.
Okay.
And you know that you're not fit to be a manager because of what all goes on. Now, in that scenario, what should a disciple do?
You see, there has to be a relationship with Guru.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be open-hearted relationship with Guru. If you are purity of heart, you have a faith in order of Guru, that that's a driving force. You may, despite it being against your conditioned nature, against your so-called interest, you may do it anyway.
As a service.
And be successful. But if there's a weakness there, you haven't reached that level of purity of heart, then it's better to express it to Guru. I very much appreciate the instruction you're giving me, but I really don't feel I have the adhikar to honestly follow it, and I don't want to disappoint you or, you know, be a disturbance to your mission. So, you know, it's always a matter of practicality. When you're talking relationship, there has to be, it's a two-way street. It has to be open enough for you to be able to express, you know, like that. But we should be always working on developing that level of faith where we can understand. You see what these devotees went through in the early days of Prabhupada. Amazing. Amazing. The risks that they took.
Yes.
Mataji, I would like to elaborate on my understanding of what you said.
Okay.
So, we can see that all these devotees who are at such a strong level today, they obviously would have been in the same situation like what she's talking about, that, you know, they were not comfortable doing following the instructions, they were probably not capable, a lot of things would have been not good for the spiritual life. That's what they would have thought at that point of time.
Right.
But just by following that instruction, whether tough or simple, it was good for them.
Not always. Not everyone who did that in the early days is still around. Not everyone who did that in the early days is fixed to Prabhupada's feet.
Okay.
So it's a matter of, you know, like if you pour water on a neem tree, you're going to get a different fruit than if you pour it on a mango tree.
Okay.
So that is there. But regardless of that being there, neem can be helpful. So then even if you're a neem tree and Guru is pouring mercy in the form of instruction, you have proper, you know, mood of relationship, honesty of relationship with him, then you can grow within that circumstance and be of value to the mission.
And so what I also understand is Guru gives an instruction and you might not be very comfortable about it. But still the best option is that to follow it. The second best option is to discuss it with him and then try to follow it.
Yeah.
Am I correct in that, Mataji?
You see, if you have to be honest with yourself.
Okay.
If your heart is saying, I'm prepared to give it a try, I'm prepared to take the risk.
Sure.
Then what you're saying is good. But if the heart is saying, I know it's not the heart, it's the mind. I can't do this. This is going to really mess things up. If the mind is already saying that as soon as the Guru opens his mouth and gives you an instruction, then you clarify and sort it out.
And and after that explanation, if he still says, you know, do that, that means then the disciple should try his level best to follow that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But can it not be the heart also which tells you?
What's that?
Don't do the management.
Well, if you've got external manifestation of Guru sitting in front of you and telling you to do it, how much strength can you put in that statement?
I just remember when Mahaprabhu told the Srivastava to keep Nityananda Prabhu out.
Well, that's a different leela.
Yeah.
That's a different circumstance. Okay, let's move on. Okay, so what is the culture of Guru Bhakti? And how does the mood and mindset we've been exploring this morning practically and externally express itself in everyday life? I want to take a look at Harinam Chintamani to help us answer this question. First we'll have a look at the moon and mindset from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Let's do that first. We'll have a look at moon and mindset, then we'll look at how that manifests externally and practically. So let's take a look at this. This is all from Amritavani. Take it as a meditation. It's quite deep and it's quite subtle. I won't comment on it unless it seems like it really needs it. What mentality should a sincere disciple have? Sincere disciples should be completely devoted to their guru. They should know that their spiritual master to be as good as God and the only object of their love and devotion. The spiritual master is my eternal master and I am his eternal servant. This is how a disciple thinks. Service to the spiritual master is a disciple's life, ornament, and means of survival. Disciples do not know anything except their spiritual master. They always think of their spiritual master by eating, sleeping, dreaming, and serving. They are fully convinced that the spiritual master is the fully independent personality of Godhead. A sincere disciple has the following mentality. Even if my spiritual master does not accept service from such an unqualified person as myself, I will always be prepared to render unalloyed service at his feet with body, mind, and words. If he kicks me, I will think it is because of my incompetence. His kick will come because of my faults. He is always right. May temporary sense desires not distract me from his service even for a moment. My only prayer is that my spiritual master mercifully accepts my service. I pray never to fall into bad association or to fall away from his lotus feet. My only solace it is that my spiritual master is more merciful to unqualified persons like me. With the desire to achieve his cause's mercy, I will become greedier for his servants. How do pure devotees respect their spiritual master? The spiritual master is known to ordinary people in one form and to his intimate devotees in another. The pure devotees recognize their spiritual master as the supreme well-wisher, as most dear to Krishna, and as the object of their love and devotion, the object of their eternal service and their life and soul. The spiritual master is most dear to and non-different from Krishna. It is not possible to achieve Krishna's service without serving the spiritual master. Only those who serve the spiritual master can be considered Vaishnavas. We cannot see the spiritual master's lotus feet with sinful eyes. Considering the spiritual master an ordinary human being is a hellish mentality. The spiritual master is not an insignificant creature. He is not an ordinary human being. He is a supreme Lord and is very dear to the Lord. He is a great personality, an exalted devotee, and an acharya who can award Krishna's holy names to others. How does a Vaishnav who is fixed at his spiritual master's lotus feet think? This is a very deep and subtle one, so please take special care and hear very carefully with your heart this one. Unless I realize that all the people in the world are worshipable, I cannot offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual master. My spiritual master is the master of the entire world. People who are envious of my spiritual master are also envious of the Supreme Lord and of every other human being. Unless I feel this conviction in my heart, I cannot become a real servant of my spiritual master and cannot surrender at his lotus feet. Neither will I be able to understand that I am the most insignificant created being. Therefore, I will not be able to chant the holy name of Hari thinking of myself as lower than a straw in the street and more tolerant than a tree. I will not be devoid of the desire for respect or prepared to offer respect to others. If I respect my spiritual master properly, I will be able to respect the whole world. This will be made possible for me to become free of the desire to receive respect for myself, and thus I will be able to glorify Lord Hari constantly. Quite an amazing elaboration on Sikshastika 3. How should I treat my spiritual master? Serve your spiritual master with love and devotion, just as you do Krishna. Consider the spiritual master as good as the Supreme Lord. Do not think him inferior to the Lord in any way. It is a disciple's duty to treat, worship, and serve the spiritual master as if he were God. If a disciple does not do so, he will fall down from his position as a disciple. Only those who consider the spiritual master non-different from the Supreme Lord can understand the confidential purport of the scriptures, chant Hari's holy name, and preach Hari Katha. To teach about his own service, Lord Krishna appears in the form of the spiritual master. If we are fortunate enough, we can understand this flawless scriptural Vedic verdict. Otherwise, we will remain doubtful and continue to drown in the ocean of material existence. The spiritual master is neither the predominating absolute nor the original predominated absolute. He is a manifestation of the original predominated absolute. Lord Krishna is the worshipable Godhead, and the spiritual master is the worshipper God. Lord Krishna is the predominating absolute, and the spiritual master is the predominated absolute. Because the spiritual master, who is a worshipper of God, is a personification of service to Krishna himself, he is most dear to Krishna. This is a special characteristic of the science relating to the spiritual master. Sri Krishna is the energetic, and the spiritual master is his complete energy. A spiritual master is not an ordinary human being. He is the master of the living beings. The spiritual master is the supreme consciousness and a manifestation of the Lord's spiritual energy. But the living entities, as minute spiritual parts, sparks, belong to the Lord's marginal energy and are part and parcel of the Lord. How determined should we be to serve the spiritual master's lotus feet? A real disciple accepts his spiritual master as servant of God, most dear to Krishna. He never considers his spiritual master inferior to the Lord in any way. A sincere disciple serves and worships his spiritual master as if he were God. Those who do not follow this principle fall down from their position as disciples. Until we see the spiritual master as a manifestation of and non-different from the Supreme Lord, we will not be able to chant the Lord's name purely. A genuine disciple must possess firm determination and faith in his spiritual master, thinking, I will serve my spiritual master, Lord Gauranga, with utmost simplicity. I will follow my spiritual master's instructions, which have come down from the Supreme Lord. I will never disobey my spiritual master's order under the influence of anyone in this world. If following my spiritual master means I must become proud or an animal or go to hell forever, I will never hesitate. I will not follow anyone other than my spiritual master. I will destroy the current of mundane thought by the strength of his instructions. The main current of mundane thought is what's coming from our mind. Yeah? If my spiritual master showers even a particle of pollen from his lotus feet upon the world, then millions of people will be delivered. There is no knowledge or proper code of conduct in the 14 worlds that weighs more than a particle of dust than the lotus feet of my spiritual master. Any questions on that?
No.
Pretty clear. Yeah.
This came that this people who are envious of their spiritual master are also envious of the Supreme Lord, of every other human being. Until I feel this conviction in my heart, I cannot become a real servant of the spiritual master. Why would people be envious of the spiritual master?
Because they're envious of Krishna. He's representative.
And I'm devoting when you see in today's world, they are envious of the spiritual master.
He's the representative of Krishna, and they're envious of him.
But how is it for us in ISKCON with other gurus? Like we have our own guru and Prabhupada, and then
we should respect him. As we respect our guru, this is covered. That respect should be there, obviously.
Ramchandrapuri.
What's that?
Ramchandrapuri. Mahaprabhu is respecting him,
yeah.
Even though he's
such a nonsense. He's also respecting his sister Chilla. What can you do? I take your point.
Also, can we take it like this, that Krishna manifests in different gurus according to the disciples' need?
Oh, that's a fact.
So, it's Krishna's manifestation.
Yeah, we're looking at, but what Raj is raising is more the specifics within the general.
Okay.
Because it's not that we will take every guru and treat every guru as we treat our own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, okay. You know, like... that's there, but then there has to be a culture of respect,
sure,
for all who are manifesting from Krishna for the purpose of uplifting,
yeah,
those who are sincere and serious.
So the guru says that you treat the God brother equal to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Ishwara Guri also sent his own disciples to serve Mahaprabhu.
Right. Yeah.
So on that order, then one can.
Yeah. It will be, you know, you have to always take into consideration the principle and the detail. The two things are always there. With any instruction, you always have the principle, and it doesn't change. And you have the detail, which will be according to time, place, and circumstance. Yeah.
It says that I will serve my spiritual master and Lord Gauranga with utmost simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
You also many times say, Mataji, that we will make our hearts simple. What does that mean?
It means that the dirt is gone. The dirt has gone.
Oh, dirt has gone.
You know, a room is simple when there's not much in it. The more that's in it, the more problematic it is.
We can take it as our ego also, that we ourselves are.
Of course, because that's a major thing that we have to deal with, because all these are parties that we're calling ourselves. They're parties. We're not advanced devotees. We're not Vaishnavas. We're none of these things.
I found that yesterday only, Mataji.
Powerful. Okay, any other questions?
Can we also say that without bringing our mind into the picture, the instructions, is that also simplicity?
Purified mind is a good friend. It helps us a lot. But it's not, if it's our worst enemy, better to keep it out of the picture.
There are two other stages, the mind, the intellect, and the ego.
Right.
So when the mind is, you can somehow pacify the mind, the intelligence is corrupted. And even if the intelligence is purified, it's the upadhis which you are mentioning are so deep-rooted, and they will not allow, you know, the...
But we always have to remember that the driving principle for true service to Guru is attachment. And attachment can cut through everything. Attachment can cut through everything. Yeah. You look at how much sacrifice a mother will go and will make to serve a child, to raise a child. Things that we would consider like inconceivable and impossible is practically every day for a mother. Yeah? So why? Because of the attachment.
I'd like to give examples of the three grihastha couples who went to Europe. Mm-hmm. They were so attached.
To Prabhupada.
To Prabhupada. Mm. So cut through all that, what were the obstacles?
Yeah. And it's very interesting because the one thing that they asked of Prabhupada before they left, he said, do you have any questions? Just before they left. And they said, Prabhupada, will you put your feet on our heads? So he allowed them to put their head on his feet.
That was the only requirement they needed.
That's all I needed.
The faith was there, no other
way. Yeah.
We didn't think it will pollute us or why we will leave Prabhupada and this and that. Mm.
So amazing. Okay, so this is looking at the mind and mindset. Mood and mindset of the disciple. So now that we have a look at the inside of it, we always look from inside out. I was thinking first to look at the externals first, but then it doesn't really work that way. So we had a look at the mood and the mindset. Now let's have a look at how this practically and externally expresses itself. Even if we don't have the mindset and the mood quite right, by following these principles from Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Harinam Chintamani, it will come into place. It will help us to get the right mind and mood and mindset. This is basically all from Harinam Chintamani, which is very interesting. But he spends so much time explaining guru culture, guru disciple culture, within a work that is dealing specifically with Harinam, chanting the holy name. So we can understand that it's very important that we get it right. Okay, let's read through it. Do I know the guru-disciple culture? Am I living it? The guru principle. Both the Siksha Guru and the Diksha Guru are Krishna's servants. Both are manifestations of Krishna's power that reside eternally in Braj. Never think that the spiritual master is an ordinary mortal. The Guru is Krishna's potency, Krishna's beloved, our eternal master. One who devotes himself to the Guru in this consciousness frees himself from the material predicament on the strength of this devotion. The proper etiquette. Before worshipping Krishna, one must first worship the Guru. One offers the spiritual master Krishna's prasad. One should worship Krishna with Guru's permission, and one should chant the Lord's names while remembering the Guru. Fundamental role of Guru. Everything we do, we should be remembering Guru. We should be taking permission first before even thinking to worship Krishna. Otherwise that worship has no value. How one must have faith in the Guru? One who shows disrespect to the Guru commits an offense. It is an offense that impedes his advancement in the spiritual life. Anyone who is equally devoted to Guru, Krishna and the Vaishnavas and takes shelter of the holy name is a pure devotee and is quickly delivered. One whose faith in his Guru is unshakable will reach the goal of Krishna Prem on the strength of chanting the pure name. Just because you have that unshakable faith in Guru you'll have the strength to chant pure nam, and by that you'll reach the goal of Krishna prema. When to reject Guru? Nevertheless, it may happen that for some reason the spiritual master falls into bad company and becomes bereft of qualifications. At the time the disciple accepted the Guru, he was highly exalted, but by committing offences he loses his spiritual understanding. He becomes inimical to the Vaishnavas and loses all taste for chanting and gradually succumbs to the desire for wealth and women. The disciple should leave such a guru, and if Krishna is merciful, he will find out Sadguru and again take up the pure name. The guru and disciple should test each other before establishing a relationship. The spiritual master must be strict with unworthy disciples, while a disciple who takes shelter of an unqualified guru becomes worthless. As long as both of them remain stable in their qualifications, there is no question of either one of them breaking off their relationship. The guru-disciple relationship is a permanent one. If both maintain their purity and sincerity, their eternal relationship is never broken. However, if the spiritual master becomes contaminated, the disciple should immediately repudiate him. Similarly, the spiritual master should repudiate the disciple who is insincere and fallen. If either of them fail to do so, they will fall down. The evidence for such repudiation of a guru by disciple or a disciple by spiritual master is given elsewhere. And then he's quoting from Mahabharata, which is quoted in Bhakti Sandhava. If the spiritual master has been contaminated, he'll no longer discriminate between what is to be done and what is not to be done, and has taken up the path of wickedness, then he must be abandoned. Jayavadana Bhakti Vinod Thakur writes that there are two valid reasons for leaving a guru. The first is, if at the time of being initiated the disciple had not properly examined the spiritual master for his worthiness and later found him to be ineffectual. The second is if the spiritual master changes and due to bad association becomes a mayavadi or envious of the Vaishnavas. One should only take a guru after testing him. One who shows disrespect for a bona fide spiritual master is the most sinful offender anywhere in the world. One should therefore take particular care from the very beginning that he has taken a pure devotee for his spiritual master. The scriptural injunction is that both the spiritual master and his disciple should test each other prior to cementing their relationship by initiation. If one thinks beforehand, "May I never have to suffer the distress of leaving my guru," this difficulty will never arise. If a guru has no devotion, his disciple will be just like him. So one should take care to examine the guru to see if he is pure. The offense against a pure devotee guru is a terrible thing, so disastrous that it can ruin both man and God alike. How to properly honor the spiritual master. One should never step on or over the guru's seat or bed, his shoes, vehicle, footstool, bathwater, or his shadow. One should not worship another person, thinking someone else will be his equal, initiate, explain, or give orders in the guru's presence. Whenever and wherever the disciple sees the spiritual master, he should fall on the ground and offer prayers. The guru's name must be uttered with reverence, and one should never show indifference to his commands. One should eagerly honor the remnants of his meals and never say anything displeasing to him. One who acts in this way will attain all perfection through chanting the holy name. So say the scriptures. Any questions on that? Yeah.
Meant to reject a guru.
Mm-hmm.
What if the guru is still chanting after? So pardon.
Not
become immigrant to the Vaishnava.
What's that?
Has not become immigrant to the Vaishnava and is still chanting.
Yeah. So what's your question?
Question is, should we reject such a guru as...
You see, it's one thing to reject someone as guru, it's another thing to reject them as Vaishnava. To be in the position of guru is quite a heavy caliber that one has to have. So he may have been in that position for some time, realized that it wasn't actually, he didn't have the adhikara and didn't have whatever for that. He still has attachment for the process, he still has attachment. He's not offensive in his dealings. So then we respect him as a Vaishnava, but not as guru. The essential point is that if the guru was fallen at the time of giving mantra, let's take those mantras again. We're not talking about the sentiments or the emotions involved. We're talking about the practicalities. If you've taken mantra from someone in a fallen position, then you have to take those mantras again. They weren't actually able, qualified to give those mantras. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Any other questions or thoughts?
When you say that when to reject a guru or guru should reject, and then the statement of the guru-disciple relationship is a permanent one.
Right.
So is there a principle we're talking here? That
We're talking detail and principle. As a principle, the relationship will be eternal and permanent. But when you're talking detail, the principle of guru is a permanent one, that's an eternal one, but within the particular circumstance, you may find that it may not be permanent or eternal. It hasn't been an appropriate connection. So then you have to make the adjustment. That's why it's always important to be aware of the principle, not just the detail. Because as the detail falls apart, you go back to the principle and you work from there.
Madhuri, you just mentioned that if at the time of giving the mantras, the guru was in a bona fide panic, then even the Harinam mantras, if received by guru at that time, then they should be taken again?
You see, the other thing that we have to consider is that we're wanting, you know, how do you relate to someone in terms of an inspiration?
Yes.
Someone to follow and trust and evolve along the path with.
Sure.
If they're in a fallen condition.
Yeah,
how can you do that?
Yes.
And also the connection with the parampara, like how can such a person connect to
the parampara? If they're not properly situated at the time of giving a mantra or representing Harinam. See, Harinam is not a mantra.
Mm.
Harinam is Krishna. But still, they're giving you Krishna. So we don't want a Krishna that's, you know, got one leg or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Krishna is full formed. It's a delicate point.
Yes, Madhuri, that's why I actually asked.
But if Guru, you know, like if Guru has fallen, and he wasn't properly, the main thing is, if he was properly situated at the time of initiation, that's not a problem. But if he wasn't properly situated at the time of initiation, then you have to take those mantras again.
And like you said, if he was properly situated at that time, then it is an option of the disciple. He may again, but he need not.
He doesn't need to take them. He needs siksha.
Yes.
He doesn't need the mantras again. He's received them from a bona fide source.
Right.
You see, the interesting thing is we have to remember Prabhupada's rod and fire analogy.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to understand this. So, you know, like the guru is like rod and fire. You take the rod out of the fire, you don't have guru.
Mm-hmm.
rod has to be in the fire. There has to be a vesh with Krishna and the parampara. See, it's not that the steel mm-hmm. rod has any value of its own, any ability of its own to give you mantra. Mm-hmm. Rather, that steel rod in the fire becomes as good as fire. Mm-hmm. Then it can give. What was the point?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, we've given you a lot to think about today.
All four sessions, actually.
Okay. And we have to be prepared to honestly assess our present mindset and dealings with Gurudev and see whether we may need to adjust or refine them. We may just have a little bit of adjustment or refinement to do. And are we prepared to give it a serious try, practically speaking? First step, practically speaking, is a hard accept of it. As a hard accept of it. Are we really prepared for change? Paradigm change. Paradigm shift. Are we prepared to move out of comfort zone? Very comfortable to think of the master. In the pretense of being a servant. Very comfortable. But that's not what it's about. Okay, what I wanted to do was to finish today with some meditative prayers to Prabhupada. I thought it would be a nice way to finish off the session.
I think we need a couple more. Two more.
Heart to heart. You have to remember that Guru Parampara, practically speaking, is a heart to heart connection. It's not a mantra to mantra connection. It's a heart to heart connection. A Pushpanjali of contemplative prayers offered at the divinely soft lotus feet of our beloved Śrīla Prabhupāda. O Prabhupāda, a moon amongst devotees and touchstone of preachers, chanting Krishna's name with a voice intense with emotion, you captured the hearts and minds of the people of this world. Please capture my heart, a stubborn and stray animal, and make it your own. O Prabhupada, O selfless and magnanimous maintainer of your devotees, raising your arms and dancing in ecstasy, you gave new life to a world drugged by the vices of Kali. Please appear in my heart, dance up a storm, and blind me to everything but you in the world of your Radhasha. O Prabhupada, the soft light from your lamp of affection illumines my heart and step by step makes clear the path through the dangerous darkness of Kali's reign. May my mind and heart be forever fixed on that lamp in gratitude, for it is my only solace and safety in this mad, dark world of names. O Prabhupada, your lotus lips continuously showered forth the sweetest nectar in the form of Krishna's name and fame. So unassumingly you gave us so much, so easily. Let me never treat your gifts cheaply. Rather, like a miser counting and admiring his coins, let me become increasingly attracted and attached to the treasures you have given us. O Prabhupada, although I have not even a sesame seed of pure devotion for you in your sham, you can make the impossible possible. Kindly take up residence in my heart and also give me residence in yours. Then I will surely come to understand what it means to truly love Krishna. O Prabhupada, when will you rescue this unfortunate person drowning in an ocean of self-inflicted pain? When, even in a dream, will my head be decorated with the dust of your lotus feet and my face blossom into a smile from the soothing rays of your loving glance. O Prabhupada, real love flourishes in the fire of separation. Now is a time to prove my real love for you. Let me not trust my mind and senses and their accomplices that tell me that you're gone. If I truly love you, I will surely find you. In the faces of your sincere devotees, in the pages of your books, and in the struggle to become Krishna conscious and serve you. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, by your grace, I will surely find you. For you so kindly manifest yourself in so many wonderful ways. This next one is a meditation on Mangalarti at Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi Mandir. In 2003, I had the second stroke, and for a very long time I couldn't even lift my head from the pillow. And my preoccupation and one of my strongest attachments was to go to Prabhupada's Mangalarti. I'd been doing it for 18 years in Mayapur, and I wanted to do it here. Prabhupada didn't allow me to physically do that, but what we all read now is a heart churning that came from not being able to do it and finding a way anyway. Oh Prabhupada, when will I confidently sound the conch announcing the victory of your teachings and devotional process over my unruly mind and senses? O Prabhupada, when will I offer you a mind strongly but sweetly fragrant with the incense scent of non-enviousness and true equanimity? O Prabhupada, when will I offer you the lamp of my heart ablaze with the desire to serve your desires as my own? O Prabhupada, when will I offer you honest tears of repentance for the many times I have abused your very gracious and practical magnanimity? O Prabhupada, when will I take the well-kept cloth of my false pride and help clean the weeping sores presently paining your beloved ISKCON? O Prabhupada, when will I stop worshipping you with flowers offered without devotion and sincerely offer the lotus of my heart at your divine lotus feet? O Prabhupada, when will I take the chamara of unmotivated discrimination and whisk aside the self-imposed obstacles obstructing my wholehearted service to you? O Prabhupada, when will I fan you with enthusiastic plans for nourishing and expanding your mission, plans based on simple purity and compassion? O Prabhupada, when will I sound the conch to announce that the final battle has been won, that my mind and heart have taken full and permanent shelter at your divinely soft lotus feet? O Prabhupada, when will that day be mine?